baseball, television, and Walter O'Malley. A potent combination that makes for some interesting reading this week in TV Guide magazine. Buy it.
Channel 7, New York.
Good luck tonight, Shelley.
Thank you very much. Is the studio full?
It's packed.
That's good. They look like a lively bunch.
Very lively. Okay, Shelley, you're on.
Very nice, warm, and encouraging welcome. Can use a welcome. I don't, with due respect to you, I don't know what you're doing here. Why are you here? I do know that there must be a few people, maybe half a dozen, looking at home on their sets. But what are you doing here in the studio? Why? I suspect strongly that many of you came in tonight without knowing who was here. You know, this looks nice, let's go in, you know. And then somebody in your group said, "Ooh, Shelley Berman is here." And another person said, "Who's she?" And I said, watching me at all. I didn't do anything funny in your life. Please, wait. If you're watching me at all, you probably have noticed, I'm sure, that I am a rather nervously disposed individual. I'm always flailing about with my arms, and I paw at my face an awful lot, and I kind of stutter a little, and I smoke an awful lot, and I'll be dropping the cigarettes on the floor. Forgive me, there's no place else to put them. I'll step on them. We won't all be destroyed here tonight. But you see that I am nervous, and I hope this doesn't upset you. I am loaded with mannerisms. I hope they don't bother you. I'm that way. I'm nervous. I'm more nervous tonight than usual. It's been a rotten day, that's all. A perfectly rotten day from beginning to end. First of all, I'm exhausted. I got some new shirts today, and I've been taking out the pins. Oh, save it. It's precious. Three shirts, you know, that's 1,400 pins, right? And they're so well concealed, aren't they? You always miss the one that hits the jugular. Only the points are visible. The heads are hidden, aren't they? I know what happens at that factory. At the packaging plant, when they give it to an inspector who says, "Oh, no, you can spot the pins, take them back and hide them." I know that. Eventually, you get desperate and you pull them out by the wrong end. Well, that's what I did. I tore three shirts today. This was the beginning of an accumulation of events, which brings to you the wreck you see before you now. You laugh at misery, eh? Well, I did another thing this afternoon. I have compulsive behavior. I'm a very, I can't. Today, this afternoon, I looked at my pillowcase. I haven't done that before, and I've been with it for so many years, you know. And I looked at my pillowcase, and
I was suddenly seized by an absolutely unaccountable and uncontrollable desire to take off the pillowcase. I had to see what was under that case. Well, of course, I gave way to this base passion. I took the case. Of course, you can see that I'm not a brutish man. I'm a gentle man. I didn't just rip it off. You know, I inched it up gently. You know, the way a man should. Didn't even look directly at it. Glanced over my shoulder. Got the thing off. It was a pretty little thing. Yeah, what a pillow. But it did have... It did have a flaw on one edge of the pillow. There was a tag sewn on. And in rather frightening letters, it said, "Do not remove this tag." Under penalty of law, $500 fine, or 6 months in jail, or both. I tore off the lousy tag. That's all. Not only that, I went to the pillow next to mine. I ripped that tag off too. Picked up the bed sheets and tore the tag off my mattress. And I want to give myself up. Do you really condone crime? Some civic-minded person, please call the police. Stop me before I tear more tags. I must have help. Well, you can see, can't you, how one so introspective as I might on such an inauspicious occasion. I don't know what I said. Well, with this sort of thing happening, might get too brooding, thinking about the bad things in life instead of the nice, the gentle, the sweet things in life. I got to thinking about yesterday, the thing that happened to me yesterday. I was the victim of such a singularly abnormal set of circumstances. Well, let me tell you what happened. Yesterday was one of those exceptionally rare days for me in which I had virtually no obligations, nothing to do, nowhere to go, nobody to see. It was infinitely beautiful. I'm sure you know the kind of day I'm talking about. You've experienced them. We look forward to them. And I did something I had devoutly wished to do for some time. I ate a sandwich in my living room. Now, this may seem like a puerile desire to you, but to me it was important. Not in the dining room, mind you, which was 4 feet away. In the living room, it was so much more violent somehow. And things were swinging along just beautifully with me and my sandwich, when suddenly my napkin slid off my lap. Well, I picked it up and I put it back on my lap, and it promptly slid off again. All of a sudden, a little tiny man walked into my room. And I don't mind telling you, he scared the pants off me. Naturally, I welcomed him. I said hello, because I don't think it's right to be impolite to people just because they're short. And from a box which he was carrying, which was almost as big as he withdrew a napkin and placed it on my lap. And by Jove, it stuck. Well, you can imagine how overwhelmed I was with gratitude. This little guy made my day. And I wanted very much to thank him. And before I could get a word out of my mouth, my dog ate him.
Can
can you blame me for being upset? Little Derby is still on the living room. You notice how well I hid the label? Don't you think sometimes, along with me, don't you feel sometimes that some television advertising is growing more ridiculous by the minute, huh? Don't you feel? Don't you feel somehow when you're watching television advertising that your wits have departed? That your senses have suddenly numbed and laid down on the job? Aren't you a little insulted? And are your wits or your senses really essential ingredients for the reception of television advertising? Certainly not. Your intellect, be damned. Television advertising is such a graphic business. It shows it to you. And it shows it to you and shows it to you and shows it. And somehow taste has gone completely by the wayside. We are obliged, for example, to watch sinuses draining, if you know what I mean. You see the swollen membranes. Or you witness the nasograph and one nose is going and the other one is not. Or suddenly your gut is dissected and alphabet soup flows. And there's a really scary Lulu for you, which is rather current. They've stopped it recently, thank goodness, but maybe you recall it. For 2,000 years, man has been seeking an effective deodorant. It's a heck of a long time to smell bad. You call it? We call that one, and suddenly you were confronted with two marble statues revolving about. And ultimately, you are convinced that the stuff is effective if you have a stinky statue. Have you seen this one where a woman breathes on a man and he disappears completely? Now, that's bad breath, brother. When you can destroy the entire molecular structure of a human being, you got trouble in your mouth, you know. Don't let romance fade out of your life, my eye. In case of war, we want you in the front line. You know, it is destructive to propriety to say the words hell or damn on television. These are terribly evil words, aren't they? And they would lower the standards of TV, and we've got to keep a high set of standards. You can't do that. Even a comedian would never dare use these terms because it would lower things. You can't do it. Even on a dramatic show, there is a taboo against the use of these terms. It would lower things. You've got to keep them up. You can't do that. But you can talk about irregularity, can't you? Are you aware of the enormous preoccupation in America today with regularity? You get the feeling that if you aren't regular, you ain't American. I've been watching you respond here in the studio, and I hope that the response is the same at home, of course. But I can see you, I can't see them, and I'm happy to report that this side of the audience has 29% fewer cattle. This side of the audience is 29% more teeth, so what are you laughing at?
We've been doing a lot of kidding, though. commercials on television. Let's face it, without them, I wouldn't be working. However, I think that the company that's employing me has a pretty intelligent commercial, one which I would be hard put to make fun of. It is an interesting thing. I think you'll enjoy it. Stick around and then wait for me. I'll be back soon.
This is Milwaukee, population 741,000. A beautiful Midwestern city, thriving, bustling, growing, sneezing. For 45 years, it has been in a state of war. This is the enemy, Ambrosia trifida. You call it ragweed. It triggers hay fever. 10 grains of pollen from this plant in a cubic yard of air can start you sneezing. And a single ragweed plant can produce 8 billion grains.
I don't think there ever is a time when the announcement is made, is there a doctor in the house, that there isn't a doctor in the house. They go out an awful lot. But there is so many, there are so many doctor shows on television, it seems to me that I should enter into the fray. Certainly, there must be a doctor in this house. If there is not a doctor in this house, certainly there must be one looking at television right now. And so to the... For goodness sakes.
Ashamed to blow my nose, isn't it? People will see me and say, look at that man blowing his nose in a tablecloth.
What did you suddenly remember, dear? God love you. With a laugh like that, don't sit still. Move around the room, dear.
Well, if there is a doctor in the house, or if there's a doctor in any house anywhere around the country, we dedicate a portion of our program to him. Any of you may wonder what I'm doing here. I will tell you. There is a peanut butter jar on its side, and I'm cleaning it out.
Dr. Albert, Dr. Albert, I'm terribly sorry to bother you in the middle of the night. But you see, I don't live in town. I looked you up in the phone book, and I, 4 o'clock. And I looked you up in the phone, no, a.m. And what happened was I looked you up in the phone book. See, I'm traveling salesman. I'm staying here at the Wickersham Motel. And I cut my finger, and I was wondering if you can come over and take a look at it. Well, I can call you at 10, but do you think I can hold out till then? Yes, what do you think I can do in the meantime? Well, do you think that'll work? No, I'm not disputing you. I mean, I just, you know, you're the doctor. I just, you know, wondering what effect 2 aspirin would have upon excessive bleeding. Well, now, doctor, forgive my ignorance. I am a layman. I don't know these things, but do I swallow the aspirin or do I put them on the cut? I'm not trying to be funny. I really mean it. I really don't know where to put the aspirin. Well, don't say that, doctor. The point is, I really need help, and I... Well, all right, sir. I'll give you a call at 10 o'clock, and I'll take the 2 aspirin. Thank you very much for your help, sir. You're very kind. 2 aspirin.
Oh, that's getting awful color.
Oh, boy.
Hello, Dr. Benjamin, 4 o'clock. I'm terribly sorry to bother you in the middle of Tuesday. I'm terribly sorry to bother you in the middle of the night, doctor. But, see, I'm staying at the Wickersham Hotel. I don't know any doctors here. I'm a traveling salesman. I was looked you up in the phone book, and I was, I have a cut on my finger. I wonder if you could treat it. Why not? Well, what is a cardiologist?
A heart specialist. For goodness sake, you know something? For years I thought a cardiologist told fortunes.
Oh, now don't get mad. I didn't know. Well, don't heart specialists ever treat cut fingers? Well, no, I mean, I wouldn't want you to do anything out of your line. I mean, you're a heart man, you're not a finger man, you know. I would like to respectfully suggest that even baseball players do shaving commercials, you know. I noticed, doctor, in the telephone book that you have a partner. Couldn't he do anything for me? Well, why can't a gynecologist take care of me? I know he's a woman specialist, but does he have to look at the rest of me? I mean... Couldn't he just, you know, treat my finger and sort of ignore my body? I'll make a deal with him. He could stand out in the hall. I'll slide my hand out through the door. And I have very dainty fingers. I wouldn't upset his psyche.
You want the truth? My hands are kind of feminine.
No, huh? Well, all right. Well, what do you think I could... Yeah, well, all right. Do I swallow them? Mm-hmm. Well, and call you at 10. That's very kind of you, Dr. Benjamin. I'll give you a call at 10 o'clock. I'll take the aspirin. You're very sweet. Thanks very much. And thank the gynecologist. Thank the... No? I'm going to die. It's gangrene. I know it's gangrene. Hello, Dr. Carl. Dr. Carl, I'm terribly sorry to bother you in the middle of the night. Do aspirin, you don't know what's wrong with me. But I let me just tell you. Let me just tell you what's bothering me. Well, all right, I can tell you tomorrow, but don't you want to know tonight? Yeah, well, all right, doctor, I'll take the two aspirin. It's just that, you know, all right, I'll take the aspirin. Thank you very much, Dr. Carl. You're very sweet to have consulted with me. Goodbye, doctor. I'm getting a little desperate. Maybe I should just lie down and write letters to friends. Hello, Dr. Duff. Dr. Duff, I'm sorry to bother you in the middle of the night. I forgot something. Just a minute, I'll be right with you. Is this Dr. Duff? Dr. Duff, well, I'll tell you the thing, doctor. I have this cut on my finger. I was hoping you can come over and take a look at it. I can't seem to get anybody to look at it. Well, I wouldn't want to take you away from that, but I mean, is it necessary to play all 18 holes? Yeah. Well, doctor, you know, I hate to throw the Hippocratic Oath up at you, but you know, when a guy's in trouble, it's just the Hippocratic Oath. The Hippocratic Oath. Well, I really don't have time to explain now, doctor. Doctor, isn't there anything you can do for me at all? All right, but can we make that 10:15? I have 3 other calls to make at 10. All right, but thank you very much, doctor. I'll take the aspirin. It's very sweet of you. Thank you very much. I'll take 2 more aspirin. Where's the glass? I've got to do something desperate. I swear, it's... Oh, my goodness. Hello, Dr. Frank. Dr. Frank, I'm sorry to bother you in the middle of the night, but I'm from out of town. I don't know a doctor. I've been trying to get an MD over here, and I haven't had any success at all. I looked you up in the phone book. I see that you're a veterinarian. And I was wondering if perhaps you, you know, knowing medicine, you couldn't treat a cut finger. Well, it's the first finger of my left hand. Well, if you want to put it that way, sir, my left forepaw. Yeah, well, what do you think I can do to help it? Lick it? But I can lick it. You think that'll work? Well, what else do you think I ought to do? Stay off of it. A doctor. Doctor, I don't think I've made myself clear. I'm an erect vertebrate. I stand straight up, see. I never use my hands to walk on. Well, all right, fine. You're forgetting something. Don't you want me to call you a 10? Sure, I'll call you. And what else can I do? Well, can I sort of stay away from aspirin, Doctor? I've had about 8, and I just don't know, you know, sort of, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing, you know. Mash them up in my food? All right. Very, very nice of you to chat with me, Doctor. I better get an MD. One more chance, and then I'll just lie down and make myself cozy, that's all. Hello, Dr. Good. I'm terribly sorry to bother you in the middle of the night. But, well, originally my problem was a cut finger, but now I'm more concerned about an overdose of aspirin. But you see what happened. I took this glass of water here about 4 o'clock, and oh, that's a nasty cough you've got there, isn't it? So I wrapped my finger up. Ooh, boy, that's a bad cough. So that's okay. Don't apologize. It's all right. See, I wrapped my finger, see, and I've been trying to... Oh, my goodness. That is a terrible thing. How long has that been going on? Oh, that's a shame. Why? Well, I wouldn't know what to suggest, Doctor. I mean, I'll tell you what my grandmother used to do. You have an old wool sock at home? Boil it. That's right. Take it out of the water and pour salt on it. No, just salt. No pepper. That's it, Doctor. Now wrap it around your neck real tight. Then get in bed and take 2 aspirin and call me at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
There will be some informality on the actual show when we finally edit it down. For example, any joke you missed will be cut. The dull thuds are technically augmented. We take them out. So if you'll just excuse me for just a moment now, I'll be right back. I want to remove my coat. But just my coat. Well. Oh, well, that's a long walk to hold your stomach in for, I'll tell you that. Downstairs is the delicatessen. Upstairs is our apartment. This is where we live. This is many, many years ago. I am between 17 and 18 years of age. I have just graduated from high school. My father owns the delicatessen downstairs. This is the west side of Chicago. And almost exclusively Jewish neighborhood. The elders are predominantly from the old country, and somehow our family fits. On this particular Saturday, a rush day for my father in the city of Chicago, I am at the other side of the city with two close friends, Fat and Yodel. Fat's father owns a bakery, naturally. And Yodel, I guess his father is a yodel maker. I don't know. The three of us, my friends and I, have for some time now been associated as aspiring actors, young thespians, at a community theater which is held in our neighborhood on the premises, incidentally, of an Episcopal church. A structure which, for peculiar reasons, my family regarded at this stage as an enemy fortress. They have since, I am happy to say, grown out of these prejudices. And today you might well find my father standing on the walk in front of this same Episcopal church on Sundays, greeting people entering that church and greeting them with the most paradoxical remark, "My son used to be a member." During the course of the afternoon's conversation, my friends announce that they have each sent $100 away to New York to an acting school, along with applications for attendance, and they will be going soon. I'm left out. I want to go too. I'm a kid. There is no course for me to take but to make a similar request of my family. But for me to go directly to my father with a request for $100 is ridiculous. It would be like chewing on a razor blade or something. Whenever I've had a problem in my young life, I've always gone directly to my mother. My mother has always had the same wonderful, consistent maternal advice. Talk to your father. Well, I've called home on the phone because I was afraid to talk to either of them in person about this subject. My mother goes downstairs to the delicatessen. She announces to my father, "Nate, he wants to talk to you, you know." Nate, my father, picks up a cloth, wipes his hands, a cloth which, as I recall, should have been condemned months before. He comes upstairs and he talks to his son, Sheldon. Let's face it, that's my name. And it is pronounced just that way, Sheldon. At the other end of the line, asking for $100 to go to acting school in New York. Hello. All right, how you, big shot, how you? Listen, before you'll say another word, I have a request to make from you. Grow like an onion with your head in the ground, that's all. You know why I say this. So don't play act with me, actor. Your friends you can fool, actor. Me, you can't fool. You are some nice guy. You are some swell guy. What is it? I have to ask you a favor. I have to pull out all my teeth from my head. That's the way it is. Every Saturday, I ask you, come downstairs. You give me a few hours in the store. Every Saturday is the same thing. You take a powder. What kind of a guy are you, huh? What kind of a sport are you? You proud of yourself? You need a favor from me, God forbid, a couple of dollars, or the car that you smash up every week. That's another story altogether. When you were in high school, I didn't sit up with you a whole night to help you with your homework. If it wouldn't be for me, would you pass English? Ask you a lousy favor, I have to stand on my head and die altogether. All right, Sheldon, forget about it. I'll forget about it. You'll forget about it. But I'll remember, Sheldon, then don't you forget. Listen, do me a favor. Hurry up and talk. Your Uncle Max is downstairs watching the store. In 10 minutes, we're out of business.
All right, so if it's important, you have to talk to me on the telephone like a goof. You can't come home and talk to me in person, man to man. Come home, Dumbo. We'll sit on a table, a glass of coffee, a Coca-Cola. We'll talk business, Dumbo. What? Of me, you're afraid? Of me, Dumbo, you're afraid? Did I ever lay a hand on you? In your whole life, did I ever lay one finger on you? All right, but those times you deserved it. A favor, all right, was the favor. Now, I wouldn't say, yeah, I'll do the favor until I hear the favor. I don't sign the paper until I read it, big shot. What is the favor? All right, how much? How much? How much? How much? How much? $100? You... $100? Shelton, did you fall from my window on your head or something for what, $100? A secret, all right, gay and dead with your secret. What is it, $100? You tell me right now. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Don't tell me fat and youthful, tell me you. Where? New York. Say, come on, you are a sick boy, you know. You need a doctor should open up your head and look inside what you got there. You got chicken fat there in your head. What am I talking here? Am I talking here to a baby? I need it. I'm talking here to a big boy. You are 18 years old. You are a man already. Come on already, Hector. You got to think, Hector, to do something with your life, not to play around your whole life, Hector. Come on. How long, Hector? You're over here by the community theater, by the church over here, huh? Not 2 years, 3 years. Don't be a snob with me because I'll break your legs. You'll tell me a lie. How long over there? 3 years. You ever make that a nickel? A penny? A token. Then what do you give me $100 on acting school in New York? What is the matter? First place on acting school, that's a racket. They are gangsters that take away your money. The second place on actor, don't need no lessons. An actor is a natural. Either an actor is an actor or an actor is not an actor, and that's the way it is. So don't tell me. Sophie Tucker didn't take no lessons. She made a fortune. If you want my education, would I refuse you, goof, $1 to go to our college to learn something, huh? Would I say no to you, dumb bell, to go in our college and be something, huh? To make something from your life, a lawyer, a doctor, a CPA. But don't know, could you hang on your door a shingle, actor? I'll come in. Then Shelton, I will tell you the truth. The honest to God truth, I don't like the people. I am sorry, I do not like the show people. They make me, you'll excuse me the expression, to throw up on them. You had him in the house, the actors. You had him in the house. What are you telling me now? You had a party in the house, the actors. You had there by the church on opening night, a Shakespeare. I didn't understand one word. We were talking to yourself a whole week in the bedroom like an idiot. I was ashamed from you. You had a party in the house, the actors, those boys and those girls. Do you remember those boys and those girls? And I couldn't tell one from another. Sheldon, they are sissy boys, Sheldon. All the actors are sissy boys. And they all need a haircut and they all got pimples and they don't want them in my house, and that's all. $100 I'll give you so you can go get pimples, huh, in New York. Shut up, I'm talking. Listen, I can make a proposition with you. I can talk business with you. Sure, I can talk business with you. Oh, boy, with your mouth, could you be a lawyer? And you're such a liar. Oh. In 2 weeks, you'd be a president, honestly. Or a prison captain. All right. Listen, wise guy, big mouth, if I'll invest in you a few dollars, I'll back you up a few dollars, and you'll become a star, a movie star.
You'll make $1 million. You'll cock me in. Sure, you'll cock me in. You'll buy me a new slicer downstairs. I know. Here's what I do with you, Hector. You come downstairs by me in this store. This Saturday coming, and the next Saturday coming, from this Saturday coming. You know what I'm talking? This Saturday coming, and the next Saturday coming, from this Saturday coming. You know what I'm talking? Don't say, yeah, if you mean no, because I know you, you don't understand English altogether. But I'm talking. Two Saturdays coming, not going, Ganef, coming. And you work downstairs. And you work downstairs. Not a half a Saturday. Not a quarter a Saturday. A full working day like everybody else in the whole world. 14 hours, you understand that? If you heard it, I give you $100 a Saturday. $100 a Saturday. All right, don't scream in my ear, idiot. $100 we send right away to New York to the gangsters, understand? $100, the other $100 is in your pocket, so you could take an airplane to New York. You wouldn't have to fly with your own hands there, all right? If there are an extra few dollars, a hotel room and a meal, and to take our girl to a moving picture to be our big sport, all right? Lover. Children, when you're in New York, you write a letter, huh? It's a postal card. Let me know what is going on with you. Don't get lost there. When you write the letter, you write, Ma, your mother, she wouldn't have to worry. Now she makes me crazy. She'll make me crazy. I'll punch her right in the nose and that will be that. You want I should punch your mother in the nose? Then write a letter. You'll come home, she'll have an eyes nose, your mother, all right? Take care of yourself there. You wouldn't get sick there. You wouldn't catch a cold. I know you. You like to run on the street naked, no? Dress good, Sheldon. Wear a coat. You'd be all alone in New York, you know. Who will you be living there? And there is nobody there with you. A fever and sick. Dumbbell. Sheldon, you wouldn't hang around with these sissy boys. They're not for you, Sheldon. Fe. If I'll come to New York and I'll find on your face one pimple, I'll break off your hand. All right, Hector. Hector. A movie star. A rich. Feels good to have a few dollars, huh? Feels good to be rich. All right, remember how it feels, Hector, because, oh boy, what you are going to do for a living. You have a few dollars. Worse will come to worse, you wouldn't starve. You are not alone in the world. You'll keep in your mind Sheldon. Sheldon. Whatever is going to happen with you in this world, in Chicago, there is somebody. You know what I'm talking? Yeah, you know what I'm talking. All right, come on, I'll take care of you. Sheldon? Sheldon? Don't change your name. Goodbye, Sheldon.
Come close to the screen.
It's going well.
I was scared.
You think performers don't get scared?
Yes, they get scared.
But I'm not asking for your pity. But I would appreciate it. A little pity. You have noticed, though, that I do work rather smoothly.
One thing falls into place, another thing falls into place, and nothing seems to be.
Wow.
Oh, you want to see something funny with cigarettes? Want to see something funny with cigarettes?
Are you ready?
Watch close.
Isn't that hilarious?
Why?
What's so funny about a bunch of cigarettes falling down on the floor? What's the matter with you people out there?
I think it's a screen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 cigarettes for that rotten laugh. It isn't working.
I gotta tell you something funny that happened to me with cigarettes. It's a true story. It's really happened.
I don't think I'll tell you. I think I'll sit here and enjoy it all by myself.
This is really happened. True story. This happened many, many years ago. First of all, I have to give you the background. First of all, I happen to be a fan of Paul Henry. Now, those of you who know the man I'm speaking about, and you must know what a very talented actor he is. And in his heyday, how great he was. Tall and handsome and debonair, big, beautiful eyes, slight foreign accent. My goodness, when he'd come on the screen, the women would swoon. Right now, he's a very successful director. And he's a very, very fine actor. And in one movie, he created a gesture which has been since oft imitated. Now, when I describe this gesture for you, you'll recognize it, but he created it in this movie. And at the time I saw it, I was terribly impressionable. I was about 20 years old, and everything impressed me when I was 20. When I was 20, I was everything but a Nazi. That's how impressionable I was. So, anyway, the movie, as I recall, the movie was Now Voyager. And it was a scene with Betty Davis. And it was one of those close-up, misty, romantic scenes, you know, where their faces showed and he was looking at her and she's looking at him. And I'm telling you, their combined expressions were just plain dirty. That's all. And at one point, in that magnificent way he has of moving, he reaches into his pocket. He takes 2 cigarettes, puts them both in his lips, lights them both at once, takes one, and hands it to her. It was gorgeous. I was so affected. I said, wow! You know, I mean, this is masculinity. With a bit like this, you can gas some poor broad right out of her mind. So I couldn't wait to do this. You know, I couldn't wait to pull this stunt. So one day, when I tell you what I did, you won't believe me. Oh, how stupid. Oh, I really did this. This is true. I took a girl. I got my chance. I took a girl to one of these dimly lit restaurants, you know, where you feel your way along the walls. And I took her. She was sitting across from me, and I'm sitting looking at her. I'm giving her the Paul Henry look. I mean, I'm really looking. She's looking back at me like, come on, will you? But I'm looking. Pretty soon, I feel the time is right. This is it. We're going to kill her. See? I reach into my pocket. I take 2 cigarettes. I light them both at once. And I forgot to hand her one. I sat there like an idiot smoking doobie. Her eyes never left me all evening. You know, I never even knew I was doing it either. All I can recall was this enormous amount of smoke around this room. Yeah, I'm always doing goofy things like this. I don't know what makes me do. I'm always making crazy miscalculations, people. But I don't think I'm the only guilty one, people. I think you are, too. I think we, all of us, contrive within a single day to grant ourselves at least one moment of absolute, supreme, unequivocal agony. We plan it, people. Think about the last time you smashed your finger in a door.
You knew your finger was there, didn't you? Just before the door hit, you saw your finger waiting over there.
Why did I, last week, send a white coat out to be pressed with a Hershey bar in the pocket? I'm telling you, I have a coffee table at home in my apartment. It's a heavy wooden coffee table with a marble top. My hobby is bumping my shins on my coffee table. I can hardly wait to get up in the morning and walk in my living room and smash my shins on that table. I hate that table. But I can't throw it out because, you know, every man needs an outside interest. You know that. You know what happened one time?
I hit this table so hard, I saw red, I became enraged, and I kicked the table.
I kicked a table, and I wasn't wearing shoes.
I'm gonna show you a moment of agony that you have created for yourself. I'm gonna show you one that you've all done, created for yourself, a very tiny little moment of agony, but you've had. Do you ever make a grand entrance? Huh? Did you ever walk into a room someplace, a party or a restaurant, some affair, all dressed up, you make a grand entrance? You ever do that? You know, we all have, and whatever happens to us on a grand entrance, we deserve. That's true. Now, let me tell you this. It's so small that you might even miss it if you're not looking for it. A very tiny moment of agony, which at that moment, if you could die, you would live happily ever after. Let me tell you, follow me, please, and follow me with the camera. A grand entrance. Listen, did you ever sit down in a chair and a split second before you hit the chair you think it isn't there? You do something like this. And your whole life flashes before your eyes.
Why do we do it?
Wait a minute. Did you ever walk up a flight of stairs and think there's one more stair there is?
Wow! You walk down a flight of stairs and think there's one more in the ring. The shot goes right through the top of your head. And why? Did you ever slam a taxi door while the handle was in your pocket? Oh boy, I tore my pocket. Wow. That's, you know. And when does that happen? At the beginning of the beginning, right? Not at the end of the beginning. That's the beginning. That's pocket tearing time. Right? That's when she breaks the heel off her shoe.
Oh, look, I broke my heel.
You're trapped. You have to say something. You say, yeah.
Wow, broke my heel right off my shoe.
Yeah, heel broke off. You're watching your whole evening fall apart, right?
Well, I do it out of heel. Can you fake it?
So she fakes it, right?
I'm going to tell you of a moment of agony which transcends all moments of agony in the history of mankind. It is the most incredible thing I've ever heard. It's extraordinary what a man can do to himself. This is not my material, people. I didn't make this up. I had nothing to do with this. I heard this story, and I heard about five different versions of it, and maybe you have too, but if there's one of you out there who hasn't heard one version of this story, I've got to tell it to you. The rest of you have to listen. Incredible. Now, this is an indelicate story, people. I will tell it to you as delicately as I can. There is a man at a long table. There are 25 people seated about this table. This man is meeting for the first time his prospective in-laws. It is a formal supper, white tie. It's a very stiff affair, people. He's trying
desperately to behave correctly tonight. At one point during the meal, he glances down into his lap and he realizes that he has forgotten to do something terribly important. Very surreptitiously, he reaches down under the table and makes the adjustment. Everything's fine. A few minutes later, he gets up to excuse himself, and the whole tablecloth goes with him. Did you ever hear anything so dreadful in your life? What can you say at a time like that?
Whoa, how did that get in there?
You're right. Fresh did pioneer the modern deodorant in 1930. Fresh has 17 patents. Fresh Stick does leave you cool and dry. Fresh Cream is homogenized. Fresh Roll-On is instant because it's upside down. I know. I make Fresh. I use Fresh. I even get it free. So how come the girls don't go for me?
Unlike some deodorants, Fresh doesn't promise you eternal romance. All Fresh does is keep you fresh.
When you think of it, that's quite a lot.
I bid you good night.
Shelley Berman, the personal appearance, is brought to you by Pharmacrat Laboratory, makers of Alarest for allergy. Of the program usually seen at this time for having relinquished their time period so that we could bring you this special program. This is Ralph Paul speaking. Shelley Berman, A Personal Appearance, has been an ABC Television Network presentation.
My ex-husband is somewhat bitter about it, and I know what he's capable of.
She knew he was capable of murder on Hawaiian Eye tomorrow night on ABC.
Charlton Heston and Sophia Loren in El Cid. Red Book magazine calls it one of the great romances. New York Times says the spectacle is terrific. El Cid in Super Technorama Technicolor.
El Cid starts tomorrow at RKO and other neighborhood theaters.